Most landlord-tenant disputes in the county are settled out of court. Those that do come to court usually go before McLean County Associate Judge David Butler. Butler's the judge who signed the eviction order for Moesha Tyner to vacate her unit on Center Street after Tyner reached an agreement with her landlord to move out. Butler tells GLT's Judy Valente that in landlord-tenant cases, it's often difficult to balance human concerns with the mandate of the law.
The scenario you describe, where you put a single parent out who has one or six kids, is always hard. And I've had numerous cases like that where it's very hard to enter an order of possession that tells somebody, you got 7 days to move everything you own out of this apartment or this house and without knowing where to put it. One of the things that I try to do to lessen that is on the day we set the trial is typically several weeks after we set it, and I remind the tenant at that time that if the court finds that the landlord is entitled to have possession back, they won't have a month to move. It's typically 7 days. We try to be consistent so that they're not caught by surprise on the day of the trial when they're ordered to move out in 7 days. The judge can't show compassion to one party at the expense of someone else.
Judge Butler, I've sat in your courtroom a few times, and I've noticed that a number of the tenants can't afford to have attorneys if they're in a dispute with their landlord. They try to represent themselves. They have very little idea of what to do in a court setting. Does that not put the tenant at a distinct disadvantage in any type of dispute, even if the tenant has a good cause?
Certainly it does. And that's true. It's certainly true if the landlord has an attorney, but it's also true if the landlord is also representing themselves, because the landlords are experienced at this. They have probably gotten some training from a lawyer. They've paid a lawyer for advice on how to proceed with eviction cases, and they're more experienced at it because I see some of the same professional landlords in court every few weeks. So they've gone through this enough times that they know the law better and the system better. So, yeah, a tenant who does not have a lawyer is at a distinct disadvantage in these proceedings.
Is there something you do differently when people come in without attorneys, particularly the tenants who are often very ill-equipped in a court setting?
Well, under the Supreme Court rules, we can relax the rules of evidence a little bit, but both sides have to present evidence that is admissible, and you can't penalize the party who has a lawyer, you know, by not following the rules of evidence. And oftentimes it's a matter of not knowing what's admissible and what's not. But also, most tenants don't know the procedural requirements that the landlord must go through in order to be entitled to an eviction. And oftentimes the landlord will make mistakes in serving the 5-day notice, and the tenant doesn't recognize that. And the court is in a position where the judge really should not become an advocate for one side or the other, raise issues that one party has not raised. So it's difficult. Sometimes you're sitting here watching the evidence and you're thinking, if this party had a lawyer, they could resist this eviction proceeding, but it's not appropriate for the court then to put on an advocate's hat and start helping one side to prevail in the legal dispute over the other side.
In general, do you think tenants understand what their rights are? There is such a thing as an Illinois Tenants' Bill of Rights.
No, I don't think the majority of tenants know their rights. They can get some, you know, it varies from county to county, but they can get some legal advice. There are legal aid offices that sometimes will appear in court and give advice without entering their appearance as their legal counsel, and that helps.
There are some landlords who are in your court week after week. What does that say to you?
Well, and there are some landlords who are seldom in there, and there's a difference. Part of it has to do with the quality of the premises that the landlord is renting. If it's good quality premises, apartments or houses, and they're well kept, typically the rent is higher, and they're only going to accept tenants who have demonstrated the ability to pay the rent. If a landlord has property that's not worth as much, it's low-income rental property, they're going to get low-income tenants applying for that. People will normally rent premises that are comparable to what they can afford. And so, or if you have landlords that rent the low-income apartments, oftentimes they're not in as good a repair, oftentimes they're smaller, they're going to get tenants that have lower income, and that's the kind of apartment they can afford or the house that they can afford. And it doesn't take much when you're on, if you're living from paycheck to paycheck and your income is marginal, it doesn't take much in terms of a financial emergency that comes up to make the tenant unable to pay the rent. There's an interesting dynamic here. People tend to, if they have car payments, if they have a cell phone, they will pay those things before they pay their rent, because the consequences of not paying those debts are more immediate. They get their phone shut off, they get their car repossessed, but they know that when they don't pay the rent, the consequences won't be immediate. It takes a while for the landlord to be able to evict someone.
What are the types of cases that tenants bring before you? Landlords are mostly evictions, trying to get people out who haven't paid their rent, I would imagine.
Well, it's not real common for the tenant to actually initiate the lawsuit against the landlord. It does happen. The most typical scenario there is when the landlord doesn't return the security deposit. The tenant leaves, they don't owe the landlord any rent, but the landlord has a reason for not returning the deposit that the tenant does not agree with. And so the tenant files suit against the landlord to get their deposit back. That's the most common.
How frequent would you say that is? How common?
I personally see them, that type of suit, maybe two or three, four times a year.
The law as it's written, the Illinois Code regarding landlord-tenant relations, is it weighted heavily, in your opinion, toward the landlord, or does it strike a balance?
I think it is a balance. The parties start out with an agreement. It's called a lease. You can have an oral lease, but most leases are written. The lease certainly favors the landlord, because the landlord is the party that drafts those. So typical provisions in a lease would be that if the tenant doesn't pay, of course, the landlord can terminate the lease, but also there's almost always an attorney's fees provision, which means if the landlord has to sue the tenant to gain possession or back rent, the tenant has to pay reasonable attorney's fees that the landlord incurs. So the leases certainly favor the landlord because they're drafting them for that purpose. The legal process is far more balanced. The problem is that tenants are often less able to represent themselves and present their case in court than either a landlord who has an attorney or a landlord who doesn't have an attorney but is experienced in going through the eviction process.
Is there a particular case or a couple of cases that come to mind that illustrate the difficulties that you sometimes face in having to make decisions with tenants who are struggling and landlords who have a legitimate claim?
Of course, the court's duty is to do what's right, to grant each side the rights that they're entitled to under the law. The hard part is when doing what is right creates a hardship for someone else, and that is usually the tenant. Now, sometimes it's not. Sometimes you'll have a landlord who depends on that rent to be able to pay for that property or even as their income, and when the tenants don't pay, it creates a serious financial hardship for them. Occasionally, the landlord makes a mistake in the process they have to go through in order to gain possession, and you have to deny possession to them, even though clearly the tenant is not paying the rent. For example, if the landlord doesn't follow the proper procedures for serving the tenant with the eviction notice, what we call the 5-day notice for failing to pay rent. And sometimes, you know, I feel bad for a landlord who's just trying to make a living and basically has to support somebody else because they made a mistake procedurally. You know, we think in terms of compassion for the tenants because they are usually the ones who are having financial hardships. But oftentimes we think of landlords, maybe incorrectly, as being businesses that have lots of money and lots of units and they won't miss one tenant's rent. But that isn't always the case. Many of the landlords only own a few rental properties and they depend on that money to pay the taxes and then the insurance on that property. They may have a mortgage on that property to pay for the repairs, inspection fees, things like that, before they ever make any income off the property. And so if you have a tenant that won't pay and won't leave, if that goes on 4, 5, 6, 7 months, the landlord is now has a financial hardship.
From your perspective in court, and you see a lot of cases, is there some aspect of the law that you feel could be changed, should be changed?
You know, this statute has been in existence for a long time, and I understand the statute well and the notice requirements, and I think every aspect of that statute is for a reason. I don't know that I would have any sweeping changes that I would offer to that statute. It's product of many, you know, years of legislature trying to reach a statute that is fair to both sides. Now, we're acting under the assumption that it's always the tenant who doesn't abide by the contract. But the truth is landlords sometimes don't either. They don't keep the premises in a habitable condition. Sometimes mold develops or there are leaks that they don't fix and things like that. You'll find abuses on both sides. Tenants sometimes damage the property or they'll leave it in a filthy condition, which costs money for the landlord to clean up. But you also have some landlords who their property is not very suitable for human habitation, you know. So you can see sometimes you go into an apartment and you can't tell whether this is a tenant that is not very cleanly or is it a landlord that's not maintained a property very well. And sometimes it's both, especially with low-income housing.
David Butler is an associate judge of the McLean County Circuit Court. He oversees many of the landlord-tenant cases. Thank you so much for talking about this.
You're welcome, Judy.
I'm Judy Valente.
Representatives of Prairie State Legal Services are available on Thursday mornings on the third floor of the McLean County Courthouse to offer advice to tenants who can't afford lawyers. On certain Friday mornings, tenants and landlords who are representing themselves in disputes can also seek free mediation from trained volunteers at the courthouse. Anyone interested in mediation can find out more at the Self-Help Legal Center in the Law Library of the McLean County Law and Justice Center.